Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back to the Daily Jungle. What a weekend of sports. Huge weekend of football, postseason baseball is in full swing, and the video of Miami Dolphins offensive line coach Chris Forster drops of him doing what looked like cocaine. You could probably guess what dominated today's show. We also had three good guests. We had Sam Farmer of the LA Times talking LA football. Iowa State head football coach Matt Campbell after shocking Oklahoma as a 31-point dog. And Green Bay Packers safety Morgan Burnett was back in. Alvy, lots to get to, so go ahead and roll it.
Hey, babe. Miss you. Thinking about you. How about me going to a meeting and doing this before I go? There's those big grains falling, but I miss you. I miss you a lot. What do you think? Crazy?
I almost never say this, but there's almost too much to talk about. I mean, I've got enough material for a week of shows, but I'm probably not going to get to much of it because of a video that popped up online last night. And if you have not seen the video, you have not been online in the last 24 hours because that video is everywhere. And for those of you who have not seen it, it's allegedly a video of Miami Dolphins offensive line coach Chris Forster allegedly snorting lines of a white powder through a 20, allegedly, before heading to a meeting, allegedly. He allegedly shot the video himself, and then it was allegedly posted by a Las Vegas dancer to whom he sent the video. So that's a description of the video, but it does not answer the very obvious question. What the hell? I mean, what the hell was that? I've been in this business for a minute or two, and I've seen some things, but I have never seen anything like an NFL offensive line coach appearing to blast rails of cocaine before heading into a meeting. So now we're in some uncharted waters, or fresh powder, if you will. I saw that video, and I don't know about you, but the very first thing that went through my mind was to quote a legendary Olympic sprinter. I saw that video, and the first thing that popped into my mind was, Has there ever been a bigger in the history of this show? An offensive line coach blasting rails before heading to a meeting. Are you serious? And clones, save your what's the big deal, Rome? Maybe dude just wanted to get that little concentration bump that you can only get from the booger sugar before a big meeting. So the team issues a statement yesterday which read, "We were just made aware of the video and will have no comment at this time," end quote. Well, they should now because Forster has already resigned. He's worked in the NFL for 24 years. He's had two stints with the Dolphins. It is worth noting that it is not clear when that video was shot. It might not have been recent. But that's neither here nor there, because he's no longer there. And the reason he's not is because he was caught on video hoovering the Bolivian marching powder from a Dolphins office, no less. U to the H, to the O, to the H. This guy was bumping the powder in a Dolphins office. I mean, there are so many problems with that. First off, an offensive line coach should be coaching lines, not snorting lines. Yeah, I know, clones. Coffee in the morning, cocaine afternoons, right? And then to the very obvious. Look, dust is obviously the devil. And this guy obviously has a problem with the pearl. But the only thing dumber than blasting toot before entering a meeting is blasting toot before entering a meeting and shooting video of yourself doing it and sending it to your girl because you miss her. Look, I totally get missing somebody. And I totally get wanting to reach out and make a connection. If you're in a long-distance relationship or you're just away from your gal for a while, you've got to figure out a way to keep things fresh, to keep that spark alive. But is sending a video of yourself doing blow really the way to go about doing that? Especially if you're dropping lines like, quote, "Hey, babe, miss you, thinking about you. How about me going to a meeting and doing this before I go?" Yeah, I don't know. "Hey, baby, I really miss you. Check out this video of me hitting this Colombian bam bam." And then snorting a line and chasing that with, quote, "There's those big grains falling, but I miss you. I miss you a lot." End quote. Like, snort. And then, quote, "What do you think, I'm crazy?" Listen, I can't speak for the lady in question, but no, I don't think you're crazy. I think you're maybe not the brightest guy in the world. In fact, you might be the dumbest guy in the world. Allegedly doing coke is dumb. Allegedly doing coke before a meeting is dumber. Allegedly doing coke before a meeting and rolling a camera on it is dumber still. And allegedly doing coke before a meeting, rolling a camera on it, and sending that video to somebody else who could post it at any time is simply the dumbest thing ever. I mean, she could be the most loyal person, and that powder could be the best powder ever, but it's still the dumbest thing ever. Even the best case scenario with a video like that is still the worst case. And no, it doesn't matter how old that video is. A video of one of your employees smashing the big rush in one of your offices is going to get you fired. And yes, to wrap this thing up, we don't know that he's snorting yee-yo. I mean, I guess it could be the confectioner's sugar. When was the last time somebody shot a video of themselves snorting confectioner's sugar and sent it to some lady? Never. The odds of that being powdered sugar and not booger sugar is absurdly low. But then again, anything's possible. Because I would have said that the odds of an NFL assistant coach doing Pearl before a meeting at the facility would have been non-existent, and that appears to have happened. So this dude's in serious trouble. He needs serious help, and on top of that, he's got to find a job now. That's the dumbest story I've seen in a long time, and I've seen some seriously dumb stories. But just because he's a dumb guy and that's a dumb story does not mean I need your dumb takes. Drugs are a serious issue. So I'm not interested in your tweets from The Rock talking about Miami football. Listen, wait for it.
Go Canes.
I don't want your takes from Dustin Johnson or your tweets about bump and run. Just playing, Ira. What's up, man?
Romy, how you doing today, buddy?
Good, Ira. How about you? What do you make of this story of the day, Ira?
Romy, I'll tell you, that's one of the reasons that I am so hesitant to use social media, because people just can't wait to self-incriminate themselves. It's just like they're rushing to the computer to show themselves doing something stupid and illegal. And what even kicks it more for me is that the bitch turned him in. Yeah, she must really be in love with you, coach. She took the time to send that thing to the cops and turn you in. Great. Having your baby, too. That's too much, Romy. But I'll tell you what. Got to talk a little Dodger baseball here. I went to the ball game on a Friday. It was awesome. They roped around the Diamondbacks. And tonight we get the chance to put the wood to that mercenary Zach Greinke.
Sam Farmer is my guest. Sam, good morning. What's up? How are you?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. Sam, how about you? How are things?
Things are good. Just sort of adjusting to two teams in L.A. and a little different season for me this year.
I hear you. Can't wait to get to that. But before I do, let me just first ask you about, well, a quick question about former Miami Dolphins offensive line coach Chris Forster. Sam, he resigned this morning after that video of him snorting a white powder surfaced online. Sam, you've been around this game a long, long time. Have you ever seen a story quite like this?
No, that was bizarre. I watched the video last night. I just couldn't believe it. It was like a parody. And it's one thing after another for the league right now. And, you know, that's really embarrassing. And So obviously not surprising that he resigned, but alarming to watch that video.
It was. That was jarring. That was very strange, very bizarre.
Yeah.
And I would agree with you. I'd never seen anything like that. All right, now you got two teams here in Los Angeles. So let me go there right now. The Rams nearly pulled off that win over Seattle yesterday, and you made the point that it's the first meaningful game in Los Angeles in more than 20 years. Lay that out for me. What made yesterday so significant?
Well, you know, you look at the sort of ceremonial games that they had. The Seahawks game last year in week two, Pete Carroll came back and stuff. It was a, you know, sort of for the theatrics and the ceremony of it, it was a big game, but really it didn't mean anything that early in the season, or didn't have the import of this game, where the Rams had gotten some traction. They were 3-1. Now, they were 3-1 last year, but it was much different 3-1. We knew the bottom was going to – that was a dead-end street. We knew the bottom was going to fall out on that season. But this is a team that's leading the league in scoring. It's completely revamped its offense, and Goff looks good. And, you know, it's for really sort of a command of the driver's seat in the NFC West when it really looks like sort of a two-team race right now with San Francisco and Arizona falling off. And this was a real sort of statement game for the Rams. And they did almost come back. It was dramatic at the end. But that whole second half, you know, guys were in Goff's face and you could kind of see that the Seahawks still control this division. And the Rams have a way to go. They're much improved, and it could get interesting as the season goes on. But for now, it still belongs to Seattle.
Maybe so, but the fact that they played a significant game this early this season, much less at any point in this season, really says something. Now, they have been good, Sam, this season. And when the Rams are good, that means we get to hear more of that legendary fight song, Ram It. Is there anything better than that track, Sam?
Oh no, it's classic, and I mean, obviously the dance too is killer. In fact, Jackie Slater and Vince Ferragamo sit down for me to my left in the press box for a lot of games, and I always go down and check on Jackie while that's playing just to make sure that he's paying attention and he's watching that. In fact, one time I went down there and he had busted out his phone and he was videotaping it from the press box playing on the scoreboard. And he said, it's embarrassing, but I got to do this.
No, it's awesome. There's nothing embarrassing about that. It's awesome. It was awesome then, and it's better right now. Sam Farmer joining us. All right, Sam, you mentioned the second team. The Chargers got their first win of the season on the road against the Giants. I mean, where to start? What do you make of their first season in Los Angeles and how it's gone on the field?
Oh, I mean, it's been terrible on the field, but following the script a little bit. We've seen so many years now. The Chargers have been close at the end. Phillip Rivers keeps them close, and they've lost a lot of close games. Yesterday's game was pretty ugly, and I think the Giants lost four receivers, including Odell Beckham. I mean, that was a terrible day for them. That's one of the big surprises in the league right now is how poorly the Giants have done. But in terms of on the field, obviously, close losses for the Chargers. I mean, you look at that Denver. I was at that Denver game, the opener. They really should have won that. I mean, Koo made the kick, and the Broncos called the timeout just in time and to icing, and then the second one gets deflected. So they came so close. There was a Miami game when Koo misses that kick. Chargers even thought they won that game. They fired off the cannon
right
after Koo missed the kick. And then, you know, so they've had these close games. They've lost them. But the big story for me with the Chargers is just sort of the reaction off the field and the reaction to L.A. And it's been, you know, kind of a yawn from L.A. Sort of the worst thing, you know, the doomsday scenario for a team coming in is getting no attention. And to a large degree, you know, that's been the case for the Chargers. They've got an uphill climb, and so far they haven't moved the needle in L.A. yet.
We're talking to Sam Farmer for a few more moments. Sam, would winning fix all of that, or would they still be having the same problems building a fan base, even if they were 4-1 instead of 1-4?
Well, I mean, they'd be much better off, obviously, at 4-1, but I still think there are some baked-in problems to this. And, you know, sort of piercing that L.A. market, and they came into a situation where they were uninvited. You know, nobody asked them to come and fight for L.A., and you know, it's hard enough in L.A. With one team, you know, for one team to sort of captivate the attention of L.A. And so for a second team, it sort of floods the engine in L.A. And the NFL, you know, now you look at it and you say, why did the league look at this as a two-team market? The only reason the league looked at this L.A. as a two-team market for years is because it would take two teams to finance a stadium. You'd have to have that many games, sell that many PSLs, et cetera. Stan Kroenke comes in, and he can bankroll the stadium himself, which he's doing, and it takes away that need for L.A. to be a two-team market. I mean, this is a market that three teams left. It's not a turnkey market. It's hard to get attention here. And particularly, you've missed a whole generation. A whole generation's gone by without the NFL, and now you're trying to re-engage them. Re-engage them in an era when TV is better. This is the golden age of broadcasting the NFL. And you got this whole generation that's got this shrinking attention span where they want to see the Red Zone channel, and they want to have fantasy teams. And going to a game is almost secondary. You want to sit at home and watch on three screens. And so it's a real tough sell for the NFL. And getting back to that Miami tape, stuff like that didn't help. You know, it's just going to be a real slog, I think, for both teams.
I think Sammy's are all incredible points. And not only that, but you don't want to pay $50 for parking or more. You don't want to wait in long lines to go to the bathroom or get concessions. You want to sit in your house with your perfect HD, with your perfect climate control, and not wait for anything. So finally, all that said, what do you think the Spanos family thinks about how this first season's gone?
Oh, they've got to be really wringing their hands. This has gone sideways very quickly. And, you know, you look and you say, look, we're having a hard time selling out the stadium. It's a 27,000-seat stadium. More than half or at least half of the people there are rooting for the other team. We're getting booed going out on the field. This is not what we expected when we went to the nation's second-largest market and left the San Diego market that, aside from the stadium issue, and that's a big one, the good devoted, loyal market when you're putting a good product on the field. And the league looks at it that way. The league likes San Diego as a market. And, you know, maybe a team will wind up there again. But so far, it's been a disaster in L.A.
Normally, scoring a go-ahead touchdown in the 59th minute of an NFL game is a good thing. Normally, scoring with 73 seconds left in a football game means you've got that game on lockdown, especially after a 17-play, 79-yard drive that took more than 8.5 minutes. Normally, that's the story of that ball game, especially when it's Dak Prescott who ends that drive like this.
Prescott's in the gun on 3rd and 2, handoff. Elliott trying to get up the middle. No, Prescott keeps it. He runs around the left end. And he bangs it in for the touchdown. And a tremendous windmill spike. And the Cowboys lead with 1:13 remaining.
That's how good a fake that was. Hand off Elliott. No! So normally something like that happens, and that's that ball game. 73 seconds left. Long drive like that. Dak Prescott with the dagger. Except for when Aaron Rodgers is the guy standing on the other sideline. And except when the Pack are in Jerry World. Because for the second time in 9 months, Rodgers had the ball in his hands in the game's final minute. And for the second time in 9 months, he ripped the heart out of the Cowboys' chest. And as that emailer so aptly put it, he ate it. Down 3, 73 seconds remaining. No Jordy Nelson, no Ty Montgomery, no starting left tackle. Didn't matter. Put the ball in number 12's hands and the Pack are going to win. Especially if they're playing America's team. A perfect back shoulder throw to Devontae Adams. A quick toss to Marty B. Takes them across midfield. A couple of snaps and then the entire stadium knew exactly what was coming next. A draw play takes the Packers to the 32. Now they're within Mason Crosby's range. At that point, every Cowboy fan on the planet would have conceded that field goal and just taken their shot in overtime. But then Aaron Rodgers converts that 3rd and 8 with his feet. He shakes loose of a couple of tacklers. He high steps it down the sideline. And after taking a shot at Adams on that fade in the end zone, Adams goes back to the huddle and says, do it again. Throw it up there again. Run it back. I've got this. So what's Rodgers do? Calls for the same thing, gets the same look and the same coverage, and this time he did not miss.
Aaron pointing to the right now. Gets the snap. Looking. Throws left side of the end zone. Leaping. Great.
Yes!
Devontae Adams.
Yes!
Touchdown Green Bay! A spectacular throw and catch to the left side of the end zone. They beat Jordan Lewis. Devontae Adams. Green Bay leads it 34-31.
Yes! Packers Radio. Packers Radio. How many times do we have to tell that same exact story?
Aaron pointing to the right now. Gets the snap. Looking. Throws left side of the end zone. Leaping. Great.
Yes!
Devontae.
Yes!
Touchdown. Yeah! A spectacular
same old,
throw
same old.
Catch.
A beat-up Packers team walks into somebody else's house. Patchwork O-line. Some new guy at running back. A receiving corps beat up. And a game winner to a guy taken off on a board only 10 days earlier. And they walk out winners because the guy under center for the Packers is just better than everybody else. The only thing surprising about that comeback was that it was not surprising at all. It was expected. The Cowboys knew that was coming. You legitimately could have made an argument that the Cowboys were better off having Zeke take a knee at the one and then roll the dice that he could just ram it in, just so they never gave that ball back. Even Dak acknowledged the dilemma after the game.
I mean, you're playing with fire with doing that. I mean, those guys get paid on defense too. So, I mean, if you're running out and you're trying to get it to third down and you're wasting the time, I mean, it's a slippery slope there. So, I mean, for us, it's important just to get in the end zone, put the pressure on them, and trust in our defense.
Wrong answer. Normally, I would agree with you, Dak. Normally, I would agree with you. What, you're going to try not to score? You're not going to punch it in when you have the chance? Normally, I would agree with you as long as Aaron Rodgers is not in your house and standing on the other sideline. Look, nobody plays the position like this guy. Nobody carries his team the way 12 does the Packers. As long as there is time on the clock and he's got the ball in his hands, he's every defense's worst nightmare still yet. And yesterday, with the Cowboys badly needing that W on their home turf, Rodgers proved once again that he is the baddest man on the planet. That he's a true cowboy killer. Now that right there is some kryptonite.
Made me Superman. It was like kryptonite.
That is like kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
That's like kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
And all of a sudden the Cowboys have got problems. They've lost as many games now than they did all of last season. They're 2-3 right now. And they're not what they were. Because that right there is some kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
Same old Packers. All sorts of problems, and they still found a way to get it done. You cannot leave Aaron Rodgers that much time. And for the Cowboys, that's not only kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
That's a real kick in the junk. 2-3, they've already lost as many games as they did all last season. They're already two games back of Philadelphia. And I hate to say a Cowboy fan, but clearly the Eagles are the class of that division, not you. So this is not going to be another one of those magical seasons that the Cowboys had, like the one they had last year. And then on the back end of that, Jerry Jones said, any player that does not stand for the anthem is not going to be on his team. So taking a knee would be kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
What if Dak Prescott said, yeah, I think I'm not going to stand for the anthem. Then what? Well, they don't need to worry about that just yet. But the more things change, the more they stay exactly the same. And Aaron Rodgers still owns the Cowboys. 7 of 8, they've beaten them. Twice in the playoffs, they're 3-0 at Jerry World. And they shocked them in their own house again. And what more can you say about Devontae Adams? This guy was taken off on a board 10 days ago. Taken off on a board 10 days ago and comes back and has a huge game. Oh, and I guess they don't have a problem at running back anymore, do they? Look at rookie Aaron Jones. This guy was a 5th-round pick. Like a fourth stringer, maybe 4 hours ago. 19 carries, 125 yards, and a touchdown. This guy wasn't even active for week 1. And now it looks like they've got their back. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-636-8686. We go to Green Bay. Darren in Green Bay. It's good to have you, Darren. How are you?
Oh, my God. I am just
incredibly ecstatic over Aaron Rodgers. Can I put a freaking with his name for Aaron freaking discount double check freaking Rodgers? Does that work? Oh my God, this guy is just amazingly incredible, and we are blessed to have him up here in Green Bay. I can't believe what I saw. That game was just incredible all the way from the beginning to the end, both teams fighting it out, and just was just amazing to see some run game, some semblance of a run game. But when it came push to shove, and even Troy Aikman was just seething, saying, you do not leave Aaron Rodgers with that much time, with one timeout. He's going to go down, and he's not going to settle for no field goal. And boom, prediction for right. And the way Davante Adams, man, we definitely need to re-sign that guy because he's just amazing. Another receiver.
Darren, I got a question for you. Darren, do you think watching that game, did you think that was incredible?
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. That Aaron Rodgers just was just
incredible.
Amazing.
He was incredible, right?
What are your takes on that?
You know what? I don't know that I could say it better than you just did, Darren. Morgan Burnett is my guest. Victory Monday. In fact, let me ask you instead, how does Victory Monday feel the day after going on the road and beating the Dallas Cowboys in their house yet again?
Oh, it always feels good. Anytime you can get a win in this league, I mean, that's always a great feeling because it's hard to come across, especially going into a hostile environment against a really good football team, and to come away with a win in such a really fun football game to be a part of is always a great feeling.
Tremendous game yesterday. Now, as a defense, how much confidence do you have when Aaron Rodgers has got the final minute of a game and you need a score to either win or tie, and that man's got the ball in his hand again?
I feel as a team, we all believe and have confidence in each other, and we just know as a defense, we try to find ways to get stops, get takeaways, and try to get the ball back in our offense hand as quick and as fast as possible because you know they're going to do some big things with the ball.
Morgan Burnett joining us. You know, as a teammate, I'm curious, what did you make of how Davante Adams came back from that brutal hit in the Thursday night game to lead the team in receptions and have that game-winning touchdown that he had yesterday? What kind of an impression did that make on you?
To be honest, it really didn't shock me because, I mean, Davante is a very tough guy. And, you know, he's tough. The guy's going to work his butt off, and he's going to get back on the field any way possible. And just to see what he did, I mean, you're happy for him because he's been doing that, you know, on the practice field since he stepped foot here in Green Bay. And just be able to showcase that on a big platform like that for everyone else on the outside to see, I mean, that was big for Davante. We're looking forward for him to do big plays like that throughout the season.
Green Bay Packer Morgan Burnett is my guest. Now, before the game, you were talking about how important it was to stick to your identity. So what is this group's identity?
Really, I just feel we have a real gritty team, just guys that's just going to fight, find ways to get the job done no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what's put in front of us. We know that you give us four quarters, we're going to fight to the very end and know that at the end of the day, when we walk off the field, we're going to walk off with our heads held high knowing that we put our best foot forward each and every game.
Now, your team has proven this, right? With the win, you now won three straight. You're 4-1 on the season, despite dealing with a number of injuries. So when you look at the group as a whole, when you're healthy, how good can this team be?
I mean, the sky's the limit. You know, the only thing we got to do is just keep an even keel mindset. I mean, as hard as that, it's, you know, it's easier said than done. But I know coming off a big win, you get to a certain point where you want to feel good about yourself. You want to start patting yourself on the back. But you got to keep an even keel mindset. Can't get too high with the highs, can't get too low with the lows, and just keep pushing because we have one goal, and we set that goal at the beginning of the season, and we got to find ways to keep getting better to achieve that ultimate goal.
You know, your role with the defense is really interesting. You and I have talked about this in the past, but defensive coordinator Dom Capers came to you at one point, and he asked you about wearing the communication helmet this season. What was your reaction when he first brought that up, and then what was that conversation like?
He came up to me and he was like, you know, we think about, you know, just trying to find a way to put the communication in the helmet of a guy that's always on the field. So, you know, when you come into it, it's normal that you think like, well, always the middle linebacker or the linebacker is the guy that's going to wear the communication in his helmet. And then he told me, he was like, well, you know, we're going to put it in your helmet. And at first, it's like something unfamiliar territory, but if you really sit back and think about it, you know, after talking to him with Dom, talking to him with DP, Darren Perry, our safety coach, he's like, it's really something that you already do. You just do it without the communication in your helmet. Is that as a safety on the back end, we're like the quarterbacks of the defense. So we have to get the defense communicated on the back end and get everyone lined up. So now it's still that same job, but now you just have Dom calling the plays directly to the safety instead of a linebacker now.
I get it. And when you mentioned DP, Darren Perry, I would imagine because he played for Dom Capers with the Steelers and he's your DB coach, probably having that conversation with him probably helped you as well. But then when you wear the communications helmet, it puts you in that leadership position, but that's nothing new for you. Ricky Jean-Francois said, you don't have to put a C on his chest. You don't have to say he's the captain. When you talk to him with the energy he gives off, you know he's a leader. When you have a guy like that, things click a lot easier, end quote. So how do you go about approaching your role as a leader on that team?
I just take it with, just take it full stride, try to just be the best teammate that I can be possible, whether that's out there on the football field communicating or just the way I come out and practice every day through my practice habit in the meeting room, in the weight room. I'm just a guy that's I speak up and talk when I feel the time is needed, but I'm a guy that just let my example speak for themselves. And my ultimate goal is just to really be a great teammate and be able to be there for a teammate whenever they need me.
You know, one of the things that always comes up when teammates talk about you, though, is how professional you are and the fact that you're a pro's pro. So when you first came into the league, who were some of the guys that you modeled yourself after?
When I came in, it was guys like, Tremont Williams, Nick Collins, James Jones, Charlie Pepper, and then just watching Charles Woodson, just coming in, watching those guys, just see the way that those guys prepare. Like, I knew about them from watching them on TV. But just see the way that those guys prepare week in and week out for a game in the meeting room, on the practice field, that's what kind of helped me. And I, as a young guy, I was like, okay, once I become a vet and get into that role, that's the way I want to be, and that's the way I want young guys to look at me.
Packers safety Morgan Burnett, my guest. All right, then, so you were drafted by Green Bay. You have played your entire career there. What's it mean to you then to be a Green Bay Packer and to play in front of Packer fans?
Oh, man, that's one of the best feelings, man. Just the type of energy you get around here on game day. You get that, like, college atmosphere, man. It's a passionate town about their team. When you run through that tunnel and just the excitement you get from the crowds when you make a big play in Lambeau and just knowing about the great players and the great tradition that was built here, man, it's a true blessing to be a part of the Packer organization, and it's a lot of fun to play here.
All right, so one last question. When you talk about big plays, you were one of only two safeties with at least three sacks and two interceptions last season. A sack and an interception can both be game-changing plays, obviously. So you had both last year, multiples. Which one is more exciting for you as a player? Which one do you enjoy more, the sack or the pick?
To be honest with you, they both give you that same excitement, that same feeling, because like you said, those are game-changing plays throughout the course of a game. So I think I get a neutral feeling with both of them. If I can get a pick, I love that. If I can get a sack, I love that, because this game is all about making big plays.
In terms of the NFL, Chris Forster was not the only guy in the NFL who is going to be missing some time due to events from yesterday. In fact, Week 5 was a brutal week in the NFL. One big name after another went down. In fact, it would almost be easier to run down the guys who are still able to play instead of the guys who are injured. But here's a quick rundown for you. Houston lost Whitney Mercilus to a torn pec on the very first play of the game last night, which was terrible. But then they lost J.J. Watt to a tibial plateau fracture, which is even worse. Just as the Texans' season looked like it was turning around, they've got two defensive stars out with a shredded chest and a busted stick. Mercilus is done for the year. Watts out indefinitely. Kansas City lost wideout Chris Conley to a torn Achilles. Travis Kelce suffered a concussion. Tennessee offensive tackle Taylor Lewan and Philadelphia offensive tackle Lane Johnson left their respective games with injuries. Same with Cincinnati's Adam Jones and Dre Kirkpatrick. And then there are the New York Football Giants, or what's left of them, because they not only lost to the Chargers 27-22, but they lost nearly every receiver on their roster. Dwayne Harris, fractured foot, done for the season. Brandon Marshall, sprained ankle. Sterling Shepard, sprained ankle, and of course, they lost Odell Beckham Jr. to a fractured ankle, and it looks like he needs surgery. Four wideouts in one game. They finished that game with one active receiver. It's brutal. But then again, that is your 2017 New York Giants. Anything that could go wrong has gone wrong. That's a team that came into the season with Super Bowl aspirations and a lot of buzz. Now they're 0-5, and it feels like 0-50. To call this season a dumpster fire would only be an insult to dumpster fires. It's a hot mess of a dumpster fire on the back of a train wreck. Any overused phrase to describe a complete disaster would be appropriate right here, because that's what the Giants are right now. They're a mosaic of misery. They're tied with the Browns and the Niners for the worst record in the league. The Browns have hit rock bottom. And that's really saying something for those losers. But I'd still rather be them than the Giants. Hugh Jackson's 1-20 if you need him. But for a split second, it really didn't look like it was going to be that bad. A minute and a half into the fourth quarter, the Giants actually had a great moment when this happened.
Ingram in motion, comes set left in the slot. Two receivers right. Manning back under pressure, gets hit, now throws one deep down the right side. Odell's wide open. 15, 10, 5, touchdown Giants. 48 yards.
Giants radio. So Eli hangs tough in the pocket. He hits Odell in stride for a TD to give the Giants a 5-point lead. And for an instant, it felt like they were finally going to get their first win. It looked like the Giants offense that everybody had been expecting all year long. Then they tried to go for a 2-point conversion, which they missed after taking a delay of game penalty. How very 2017 Giants of them. The Chargers cut the lead to 22-20, and then this happened.
Manning throws the slant left through the hands of Beckham, incomplete. It was a little high, but one he should have caught.
Beckham's down. Did he take a shot on that?
Beckham is down and hurt, grabbing his left ankle. I can see his right hand grabbing his ankle. He is crying right now. Buries his face in his jersey. Left foot is elevated. He is being carted off. So the Giants are down. Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard, and Dwayne Harris.
Entire receiving corps. You only hope for the best.
Never a good sign when a guy's crying on the field. I mean, almost a sure sign that he knows something significant is wrong. And if that weren't bad enough, and that seemed like that's about as bad as it could get, if that weren't bad enough, then this happened on the very next play.
Manning in a shotgun set. Calls out the signals. Takes the snap, and he's back to throw. Feels pressure. He's going to get sacked. Ball came out. Loose on the ground. They race for it, and it looks like the Chargers have it at the 11. They do.
So to recap, they lost their very best player on one play. Eli gets strip sacked on the next play. And then the Chargers score the go-ahead touchdown three plays later. And then Eli gets picked off on the final desperation drive. Ball game, season, thanks for coming. And I'm going to say potentially career-changing for some guys, starting with the head coach, Ben McAdoo. Because at some point, it's going to come back to him, on him in a big way, in a big bad way. No, he can't prevent guys from getting injured, but this team was a mess before all that happened. And now they're going to be an even worse mess right now. At 0-5, I know that some of you are going to start thinking about 0-16. Not me. Way too early to start talking about something as awesome as that. To quote the great Mercury Morris.
Don't call me when you're in my town. Call me when you're on my block and I see you next door moving your furniture in.
The great Mercury Morris. Yes, I said it. My man Merck was so far ahead of his time. Merck, I'm going to own it. I just didn't know how awesome you were. Honestly, I did not know how awesome you were when you first started to say that thing. When I used to take those runs at the 72 Dolphins, and some of those guys still do annoy the hell out of me, but not Merck. Merck's awesome. Merck said it best. Don't you call me when you're in my town. You call me when you're on my block.
I respect the Patriots if they do that. But right now, they haven't done that. So come to me. Like I said, don't call me when you're in my town. Call me when you're on my block and I see you next door moving your furniture in. That's when I'll know you're going to the championship and you're about to play. And if you win it, I'll be dressed up in a tuxedo waiting on my bride.
My man. So I'm not going to get too hyped up on the Giants being 0-15. It's way too early to start thinking 0-16 like some of you already are. Don't you call me when you're in my town. You call me when you're on my block and I see you next door moving your furniture in. 0-16 is a dream. 0-16 is special. You have to be really, really good to be that bad. And the Giants are bad, but they aren't that good. They don't have what it takes to go 0-16. They'll get themselves in position to make a run at it. Then they'll screw up and they'll go 1-15 or 2-14 because that's what these Giants do. They have everything necessary possible and run the table in reverse, but they'll do something to jack it up. Because this year, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong with the Giants. And trust me, they're going to screw this thing up by winning a game or two. Nobody ever remembers 2-14. 0-16 is forever. 1-15 is the biggest waste of time ever. 0-16 is forever. Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell. Matt, I would imagine anyone in the Big 12 is a big win, but when you go on the road against number three team in the country and you come back to win the game the way you did, how big is that for the team and how special is that for you as a coach?
No, it's really big for our football team. And, you know, we've worked really hard over the last year and a half to really start to change the culture and the vision of Iowa State football. And, you know, we've been really close over the last, you know, the last probably 8-9 football games and played some really good teams really close, but just didn't have the ability to finish it. And I think we've learned a lot, you know, at the end of last season and carried a lot of momentum into our winter and even started the season off in some similar fashions, played good football, but just didn't finish a couple games early off. But to be able to do that and do it on the road against a quality opponent like Oklahoma, that was big for our kids and big for our program. And now we get to see how we can respond to that adversity as well.
Matt Campbell joining us. You've got Kansas at home on Saturday. You know, there's so many big moments in that game on Saturday, but few bigger than Kyle Kemp to Alan Lazard for a 25-yard touchdown that gave you a 38-31 lead with just over 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You've said that you had a gut feeling before that play. What was that feeling, and what did you think as the play unfolded?
Well, you know, there had been some big third downs in really the course of the last three drives, and those third downs were heavy pressure situations. And so, you know, one of the things, we were in field goal range, but, you know, we certainly wanted to try to score a touchdown there. And it was third and five, and, you know, with a first time starter, a quarterback, we wanted to go to our best player and kind of all or nothing type play. And, you know, when we saw man coverage, I knew we had a chance. And Kyle threw a great ball, and one of our best players made a big play in a big moment, which is what you got to do if you want to win games like that.
You know, it's amazing. Matt Campbell joining us. Amazing in the sense that Oklahoma had that 24-10 lead in the second quarter. You're on the road. You're down two touchdowns to the number three team in the country. A lot of teams in that situation obviously might have stopped believing that they could win that game. What was the mood like on your sideline at that point?
You know, a big momentum builder for us was we were able to hold them to a three and out right before the half, and we got the ball back with about 40 seconds left and hit a big play, got a field goal, and right before the end of the half. And I think it gave our kids that needed momentum that we needed. And I tell you, this is a really unique group of kids. You know, we've had some tough losses. We had a tough loss versus Texas. We were really close in the game, and, you know, our rival game earlier in the season, we're in a very similar style game as to what we played with Oklahoma, and we're right there. But we didn't make some of those plays. And the thing that I really love about this team has played really hard for 60 minutes all year long. Now our detail and our margin for error is not great. So, you know, our detail and our margin for error is really what won us the game and allowed us to stay in it. But it's our leadership that allowed us through that moment of being down 24-10 that was the difference.
Matt Campbell joining us. You know, I'm trying to talk to you about Kyle Kemp and a first-time quarterback and Joel Lanning and the commitment he's made to you. But when you talk about the team and the guys and the character, you said something, quote, "There's been a lot of adversity at Ohio State for a long time, and there's been a cloud around us. I think our kids said, I'm sick of it, and we're going to keep grinding, keep swinging, and getting better one day at a time. So at the end of it, here we are," end quote. When did you first start getting the sense that this group was sick of it and they were committed to changing things?
Yeah, really, for me, it was in January. And, you know, when we came back, and obviously when you have a coaching change like these kids did here a year ago, that's always hard, and especially at a place where success hasn't happened in the last couple of years had been really tough. And it was a total change, total culture shift, total total attention to detail shift. And, you know, there was a lot of growing pains year one, but I think you saw, a lot of people saw our football team get better a year ago as the season went on. And, you know, we learned some valuable lessons, and we were able to have a little success at the end of last season, won some games. But when our kids came back in January, those who kind of stayed the course, there was a spirit about this group that was really special. And we've got 19 seniors, and nothing's come easy for them in their college career. And there's some really talented players, but guys that have really stayed the course here. A lot of these kids could have left or chosen to go other places, and you know, they haven't. They wanted to stay the course and change this thing around. And there's a really good uptick of really young talent, and I think that mesh just, it's a hungry group, a group that really doesn't worry about the scoreboard or any of those things that really don't matter, but they just worry about getting better every day. And they've really done that since January. And I think that's what's allowed us to kind of weather, you know, some of the ups and downs of the early part of the season so far and play the way we did Saturday.
Rick in Buffalo. Rick, how are you?
I'm not going to lie, Jim. The Bills Mafia was pretty fired up yesterday. And the game obviously was a pretty big letdown. But I got to applaud Sean McDermott for completely changing the culture and mindset around here. And what he and Leslie Frazier have done with the defense after the Bryant brothers left in ruins is nothing short of remarkably remarkable. And no surprise that Harbaugh choked away another season. He was never a great coach. He'll never be a great coach. And Jim, there's no better time than now to rekindle the feud with my old buddy Dan, allegedly in Denver. Jigs up, Daniel. We all know you were born, raised, and currently reside in rural Pennsylvania, and you fit in perfectly with the rest of those hillbilly bums. From your I haven't showered in a month look to your constant bragging about driving a 1988 Chevy Silverado, you definitely check all the boxes. And just in case you needed more evidence, Jim, I present you with the granddaddy of them all. Daniel's engaged to be married to his underage second cousin, twice removed, a marriage made in hillbilly heaven. May the road rise up to meet you, Daniel. May the wind be always at your back, Daniel. And may the wet bar you're building onto your pop-up trailer be done in time for the reception, Daniel. Ward Terry Francona, the best manager in baseball. Unward Donald Trump, he's just pissed he couldn't afford to buy the Bills. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rick in Buffalo. Rick, before you leave, there's something I would like to give to you. The same thing that I gave to you only to take from you. A golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket.
Dan in Denver. Dan in Denver is here to respond. We go to Denver right now. Dan, what's going on?
Nothing much, Rome. First off, I want to congratulate Rick in Buffalo for getting that golden ticket. Just like the Bills, he'll start off strong this smack season, and in a couple months, we'll forget he even exists. I'll put the over-under on Rick soiling himself and losing that ticket at 3 months, and I'll take the under on that bet, by the way. But in regards to his voice, I don't think Rick's doing a Jeff in Richmond impression. I think too many winners in poverty has caused that grizzled voice. But Rome, Rick is right about one thing. I am getting married this spring, and I actually plan on traveling to Buffalo for the bachelor party. Tell me, Rick, which club is your wife working at again? I've noticed a hot topic in Rick's calls lately has been my exact location. And I don't know why you're so fascinated with where I live, Rick, but I'll tell you exactly where I am in your head. Out.
Dan in Denver. Who do you suppose got the better of that little battle? Rick in Buffalo or Dan in Denver? Clones, thank you so much for listening. And remember, a new episode of the Jim Rome podcast drops tomorrow. Check back then for both podcasts. We'll see you then. I'm out.